Part 5. The Success of Redemption from the Reformation to the Present Time. Thus, having gone through the dark time of the Church, I come now to consider that part which begins with the Reformation and reaches to the present time. And here I would, 1. Speak of the Reformation itself. 2. The opposition which the devil has made to the Reformed Church. 3. What success there has lately been of the gospel in one place and another. 4. What the state of things is now in the world with regard to the Church of Christ and the success of his purchase. 1. The first thing to be taken notice of is the Reformation itself. This was begun in Germany, about the year 1515, by the preaching of Martin Luther, who being stirred in his spirit to see the horrid practices of the popish clergy, and having set himself diligently to inquire after truth by the study of the Holy Scriptures, and the writings of the ancient fathers of the Church, very openly and boldly decried the corruptions and usurpations of the Romish Church in his preaching and writings. He had soon a great number who fell in with him, among whom was the Elector of Saxony, the sovereign prince of the country to which he belonged. This greatly alarmed the Church of Rome. It rallied all its force to oppose him and his doctrine, and fierce wars and persecutions were raised against it. But yet it went on by the labors of Luther and Melanchthon in Germany, Zwinglius in Switzerland, and other eminent divines, who were contemporary with Luther. Particularly Calvin, who appeared after the beginning of the Reformation, but was one of the most eminent reformers. Many of the princes of Germany soon fell in with the Reformed religion, and many other states and kingdoms in Europe, as England, Scotland, Sweden, Denmark, Norway, great part of France, Poland, Lithuania, Switzerland, and the Low Countries. So that it is thought that heretofore about half Christendom were of the Protestant religion. Though since, the Papists have gained ground so that the Protestants now have not so great a proportion. Thus God began gloriously to revive his Church again, and advance the kingdom of his Son. After such a dismal night of darkness from the rise of Antichrist to that time, there had been many endeavors used by the witnesses for the truth for a reformation before. But now, when God's appointed time was come, his work went on with a swift and wonderful progress. And Antichrist, who had been rising higher and higher from his beginning till that time, was swiftly and suddenly brought down. He fell halfway towards utter ruin, and never has been able to rise again to his former height. A certain late expositor, Mr. Lohmann, who explains the five first vials in the 16th chapter of Revelation with greater probability perhaps than any who went before him, explains the fifth vial, which was poured out on the seat of the beast, of what came to pass in the Reformation. Having explained the four preceding vials of certain great judgments which God brought on the popish dominions before the Reformation, it is said, Revelation 16:10, that the fifth angel poured out his vial on the seat of the beast. In the original, it is the throne of the beast. And his kingdom was full of darkness, and they gnawed their tongues for pain, and blasphemed the God of heaven because of their pains and their sores, and repented not of their deeds. 636 He poured out his vial upon the throne of the beast, 1 on the authority and dominion of the Pope. So the word throne is often used in Scripture. So 1 Kings 1:37. As the Lord hath been with my Lord the King, even so be he with Solomon, and make his throne greater than the throne of my Lord King David. 1 Make his dominion and authority greater, and his kingdom more glorious. But now, in the Reformation, the vials of God's wrath were poured out on the throne of the beast, till it was terribly shaken and diminished. The Pope's authority and dominion was so greatly diminished, both as to extent and degree, that he lost about half his dominions. Besides that authority, even in popish dominions, which he had before, he is not regarded, and his power is dreaded in no measure as it was wont to be. The powers of Europe have learned not to put their necks under the Pope's feet. He is as a lion that has lost his teeth, in comparison of what he was once. And when the Pope and his clergy, enraged to see their authority so diminished at the Reformation, laid their heads together, and joined their forces to destroy the Reformation, their policy, which was wont to serve them so well, failed. They found their kingdom full of darkness, so that they could do nothing, any more than the Egyptians, who rose not from their seats for 3 days. The Reformed Church was defended as Lot and the angels were in Sodom, by smiting the Sodomites with darkness or blindness, so that they could not find the door. God then fulfilled that in Job 5:11, etc., to set up on high those that be low, that those which mourn may be exalted to safety. He disappointeth the devices of the crafty, so that their hands cannot perform their enterprise. He taketh the wise in their own craftiness, and the counsel of the froward is carried headlong. They meet with darkness in the daytime, and grope in the noonday as in the night. But he saveth the poor from the sword, from their mouth, and from the hand of the mighty. Those proud enemies of God's people being so disappointed, and finding themselves so unable to uphold their own dominion and authority, were made as it were to gnaw their tongues for pain, or to bite them for mere rage. 2. I proceed to show what opposition has been made by Satan and his adherents to the success of Christ's purchase by the Reformation. Observing as we go along, how far they have been baffled, and how far they have been successful. The opposition which Satan has made against the Reformed religion has been principally of the following kinds, namely, that which was made, 1. By a general council of the Church of Rome, 2. By secret plots and devices, 3. By open wars and invasions, 4. By cruel oppression and persecution, and 5. By bringing in corrupt opinions. 1. The first opposition that I shall notice is that which was made by the clergy of the Church of Rome in a general council. This was the famous Council of Trent, which the Pope called a little while after the Reformation. In that council, there met together 6 cardinals, 32 archbishops, 228 bishops, besides innumerable others of the Romish clergy. This council, in all their sittings, including the times of intermission, was held for 25 years together. Their main business all this while was to concert measures for establishing the Church of Rome against the Reformers, and for destroying the Reformation. But it proved that they were not able to perform their enterprise. The Reformed Church, notwithstanding their great council, remained, and still remains. So that the council of the froward is carried headlong, their kingdom is full of darkness, and they weary themselves to find the door. Thus the Church of Rome, instead of repenting of their deeds, when such clear light was held forth to them by Luther and other servants of God, persisted, by general agreement and council, in their vile corruptions and wickedness, an obstinate opposition to the kingdom of Christ. The doctrines and practices of the Church of Rome, which were chiefly condemned by the Reformed, were confirmed by the decrees of their council. And the corruptions, in many respects, were carried higher than ever before. They uttered blasphemous reproaches and curses against the Reformed religion, and all the Reformed Church was excommunicated and anathematized by them. According to the prophecy, they blasphemed God. Thus God hardened their hearts, that is, left them to do so, intending to destroy them. 2. The papists have often endeavored to overthrow the Reformation by secret plots and conspiracies. There were many plots against the life of Luther. The papists were contriving to dispatch him out of their way. And he, being a very bold man, often very much exposed himself in the cause of Christ, but yet they were wonderfully prevented from hurting him, and he at last died in his bed in peace. There have been innumerable schemes secretly laid for the overthrow of the Protestant religion. One of the most considerable, and which seemed to be the most likely to have taken effect, was that in the time of King James II of England. There was at that time a strong conspiracy between the King of England and Louis XIV of France, who were both Papists, to extirpate the Northern heresy, as they called the Protestant religion, not only out of England, but out of all Europe. And they had laid their schemes so, that they seemed to be almost sure of their purpose. They looked upon it, that if the Reformed religion were suppressed in the British realms, and in the Netherlands, which were the strongest part, and chief defense of the Protestant interest, they should have easy work with the rest. And just as their matters seemed to be come to a head, and their enterprise ripe for execution, God in His providence, suddenly dashed all their schemes in pieces by the Revolution, at the coming in of King William and Queen Mary, by which all their designs were at an end. Now the Protestant interest was more strongly established, by the crown of England being transferred to the Protestant House of Hanover, and the Papist being, by the constitution of the nation, forever rendered incapable of wearing the crown of England. Thus they groped in darkness at noonday as in the night, and their hands could not perform their enterprise, and their kingdom was full of darkness, and they gnawed their tongues for pain. After this, there was a deep design laid to bring the same thing to pass in the latter end of Queen Anne's reign, by the bringing in of the Popish pretender, which was no less suddenly and totally baffled by divine providence, as all the plots against the Reformation by bringing in the pretender have been. 3. The Reformation has often been opposed by open wars and invasions. The Emperor of Germany declared war with the Duke of Saxony, and the principal men who favored and received Luther's doctrine. But they could not obtain their end. They could not suppress the Reformation. For the same end, sometime after, the King of Spain maintained a long war with Holland and the Low Countries. But those cruel wars issued greatly to the disadvantage of the Romish Church, as they occasioned the setting up of one of the most powerful Protestant states in Europe. The design of the Spanish invasion of England in Queen Elizabeth's time was to suppress and root out the Reformed religion. And therefore they brought in their fleet all manner of instruments of cruelty wherewith to torture the Protestants who would not renounce the Protestant religion. But their design was totally baffled, and their mighty fleet in a great measure ruined. 4. Satan has opposed the Reformation with cruel persecutions. The persecutions with which the Protestants have been harassed by the Church of Rome have in many respects been far beyond any of the heathen persecutions. So that Antichrist has proved the greatest and most cruel enemy to the Church of Christ that ever was in the world, in this, as well as in all other respects. Agreeable to the description given of the Church of Rome, Revelation 17:6. And I saw the woman drunken with the blood of the saints, and with the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. And, Revelation 18:24. And in her was found the blood of prophets, and of saints, and of all them that were slain upon the earth. The heathen persecutions had been very dreadful, but now persecution by the Church of Rome was improved, and studied, and cultivated, as an art or science. Such ways of afflicting and tormenting were found out, as are beyond the invention of ordinary men, were men unstudied in those things and beyond the invention of all former ages. And that persecution might be managed the more effectually, there were certain societies of men established in various parts of the Popish dominions, whose business it should be to study, and improve, and practice persecution in its highest perfection, namely, the courts of Inquisition. The particular histories of the Romish persecution, and their courts of Inquisition, will give that idea which a few words cannot express. When the Reformation began, the beast with seven heads and ten horns began to rage in a dreadful manner. The Church of Rome renewed its persecution of the poor Waldenses, and great multitudes of them were cruelly tortured and put to death. Soon after the Reformation, there were terrible persecutions in various parts of Germany, and especially in Bohemia, which lasted for 30 years together, in which so much blood was shed for the sake of religion, that a certain writer compares it to the plenty of waters of the great rivers of Germany. The countries of Poland, Lithuania, and Hungary were in like manner deluged with Protestant blood. By means of these and other cruel persecutions, the Protestant religion was in a great measure suppressed in Bohemia, the Palatinate, and Hungary, which before were Protestant countries. Thus was fulfilled what was foretold of the little horn, Daniel 7:20, 21. And of the ten horns that were in his head, and of the other which came up, and before whom three fell, even of that horn that had eyes, and a mouth that spake very great things, whose look was more stout than his fellows. I beheld, and the same horn made war with the saints, and prevailed against them. And what was foretold of the beast having seven heads and ten horns, Revelation 13:7. And it was given unto him to make war with the saints, and to overcome them. And power was given him over all kindreds, and tongues, and nations. Holland and the other Low Countries were for many years a scene of nothing but the most affecting and amazing cruelties, being deluged with the blood of Protestants, under the merciless hands of the Spaniards, to whom they were then in subjection. But in this persecution, the devil in a great measure failed of his purpose, as it issued in a great part of the Netherlands casting off the Spanish yoke, and setting up a wealthy and powerful Protestant state, to the great defense of the Protestant cause ever since. France is also another country, which since the Reformation, in some respects, perhaps more than any other, has been a scene of dreadful cruelties suffered by the Protestants. After many cruelties had been exercised towards the Protestants in that kingdom, there was begun a persecution of them in the year 1571, in the reign of Charles IX, King of France. It began with a cruel massacre, wherein 70,000 Protestants were slain in a few days, as the king boasted, and in all this persecution, he slew, as is supposed, 300,000 martyrs. And it is reckoned that about this time, within 30 years, there were martyred in this kingdom, for the Protestant religion, 39 princes, 148 counts, 234 barons, 147,518 gentlemen, and 760,000 common people. But all these persecutions were, for exquisite cruelty, far exceeded by those which followed in the reign of Louis XIV, which indeed are supposed to exceed all others. And being long continued, by reason of the long reign of that king, they almost wholly extirpated the Protestant religion out of that kingdom, where had flourished a multitude of famous Protestant churches all over the kingdom. Thus it was given to the beast to make war with the saints, and to overcome them. There was also a terrible persecution in England in Queen Mary's time, wherein great numbers in all parts of the kingdom were burnt alive. And after this, though the Protestant religion has been for the most part established by law in England, yet there have been very severe persecutions by the high churchmen, who symbolize in many things with the Papists. Such was that which occasioned our forefathers to flee from their native country, and to come and settle in this land, which was then a hideous howling wilderness. And these persecutions were continued with little intermission till King William came to the throne. Scotland has also been the scene, for many years together, of cruelties and blood by the hands of high churchmen, such as came very little short of the popish persecution in Queen Mary's days, and in many things much exceeded it, which continued till they were delivered by King William. Ireland also has been as it were overwhelmed with Protestant blood. In the days of King Charles I of England, above 200,000 Protestants were cruelly murdered in that kingdom in a few days. The Papists, by a secret agreement, rising at an appointed time, intending to kill every Protestant in the kingdom at once. Besides these, there have been very cruel persecutions in Italy, and Spain, and other places, which I shall not stand to relate. Thus did the devil, and his great minister Antichrist, rage with such violence and cruelty against the Church of Christ. And thus did the whore of Babylon make herself drunk with the blood of the saints and martyrs of Jesus. By these persecutions the Protestant Church has been much diminished. Yet have they not been able to prevail. But still the Protestant Church is upheld, and Christ fulfills his promise, that Matthew 16:18, the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. 5. The last kind of opposition that Satan has made to the Reformation is by corrupt opinions. The first opposition of this kind was by the sect of the Anabaptists, which began about 4 or 5 years after the Reformation itself. This sect, as it first appeared in Germany, were vastly more extravagant than the present Anabaptists are in England. They held a great many exceeding corrupt opinions. One tenet of theirs was, that there ought to be no civil authority, and that it was lawful to rebel against it. And on this principle, they refused to submit to magistrates, or any human laws, and gathered together in vast armies, to defend themselves against their civil rulers, and put all Germany into an uproar, and so kept it for some time. The next opposition of this kind to the Reformation was that which was made by enthusiasts. Those are called enthusiasts who falsely pretend to be inspired by the Holy Ghost as the prophets were. These began in Germany about 10 years after Luther began the Reformation. And there arose various sects of them who were exceeding wild and extravagant. The followers of these are the Quakers in England, and other parts of the British dominions. The next to these were the Socinians, who had their beginning chiefly in Poland, by the teaching of Elias Socinus and Faustus Socinus. They held that Christ was a mere man, and denied Christ's satisfaction and most of the fundamental doctrines of the Christian religion. Their heresy has since been greatly propagated among Protestants in Poland, Germany, Holland, England, and other places. After these arose the Arminians. They take their name from a Dutchman, whose name was Jacobus van Harmen, which, turned into Latin, is called Jacobus Arminius. And from his name the whole sect are called Arminians. This Jacobus Arminius was first a minister at Amsterdam, and then a professor of divinity in the University of Leiden. He had many followers in Holland. There was upon this a synod of all the Reformed churches called together, who met at Dort in Holland. The synod of Dort condemned them. But yet they spread and prevailed. They begin to prevail in England in the reign of Charles I, especially in the Church of England. The Church of England divines before that were almost universally Calvinists, but since that, Arminianism has gradually more and more prevailed, till they are become almost universally Arminians. And not only so, but Arminianism has greatly prevailed among the dissenters, and has spread greatly in New England, as well as Old. Since this, Arianism has been revived. Arianism, a little after Constantine's time, almost swallowed up the Christian world, like a flood out of the mouth of the serpent which threatened to swallow up the woman. And of late years, this heresy has been revived in England, and greatly prevails there, both in the Church of England, and among dissenters. These hold that Christ is but a mere creature, though they grant that he is the greatest of all creatures. Another thing which has of late exceedingly prevailed among Protestants, and especially in England, is deism. The deists wholly cast off the Christian religion, and are professed infidels. Indeed, they own the being of God, but deny any revealed religion, or any word of God at all, and say that God has given mankind no other light to walk by but their own reason. With these opinions, our nation, which is the principal nation of the Reformation, is very much overrun, and they prevail more and more. Thus much concerning the opposition that Satan has made against the Reformation. 3. I proceed now to show what success the gospel has had in these later times of the Reformed Church. This success may be reduced to three heads. 1. Reformation in doctrine and worship in countries called Christian. 2. Propagation of the gospel among the heathen. 3. Revival of religion in the power and practice of it. 1. As to the first, namely, Reformation in doctrine, the most considerable success of late has been in the Empire of Muscovy, which is a country of vast extent. The people of this country, so many of them as call themselves Christians, profess to be of the Greek Church, but were barbarously ignorant, and very superstitious, till of late years. Their late emperor, Peter the Great, set himself to reform his dominions, took great pains to bring them out of their darkness, and to have them instructed in religion. To that end, he set up schools of learning, ordered the Bible to be printed in the language of the country, made a law that every family should keep the Holy Scriptures in their houses, that every person should be able to read the same, and that no person should be allowed to marry till they were able to read the Scriptures. He also reformed the churches of his country of many of their superstitions, whereby the religion professed and practiced in Muscovy is much nearer to that of the Protestants than formerly it used to be. This emperor gave great encouragement to the exercise of the Protestant religion in his dominions. And since that, Muscovy is become a land of light, in comparison of what it was 50 years past. 2. As to the second kind of success which the gospel has lately had, namely, its propagation among the heathen, I would take notice of three things. 1. The propagation of the gospel among the heathen here in America. This American continent, which is a very great part of the world, and, together with its neighboring seas adjoining, takes up one side of the globe, was wholly unknown to all Christian nations till these latter times. It was not known that there was any such part of the world, though it was very full of people, and therefore the devil had this part of the world as it were secure to himself, out of the reach of the light of the gospel, and so out of the way of molestation in his dominion over them. Here the many nations of Indians worshipped him as God from age to age, while the gospel was confined to the opposite side of the globe. It is probably supposed, from some remaining accounts, that the occasion of first peopling America was this: that the devil, being alarmed and surprised by the wonderful success of the gospel the first 300 years after Christ, and by the downfall of the heathen empire in the time of Constantine, and seeing the gospel spread so fast, and fearing that his heathenish kingdom would be wholly overthrown through the world, led away a people from the other continent into America, that they might be quite out of the reach of the gospel, that here he might quietly possess them and reign over them as their god. Many writers intimate that some of the Indian nations, when the Europeans first came into America, had a tradition among them that their god first led them into this continent and went before them in an ark. However, it is certain that the devil did here quietly enjoy his dominion over the poor Indians for many ages, but in later times God has sent the gospel into these parts, and now the Christian church is set up here in New England and in other parts of America, where before had been nothing but the grossest heathenish darkness. Great part of America is now full of Bibles, and full of at least the form of the worship of the true God and Jesus Christ, where the name of Christ before had not been heard of for many ages, if at all. And though there has been but a small propagation of the gospel among the heathen here, in comparison of what were to be wished for, yet there has been something worthy of notice. There was something remarkable in New England, both at first and of late, and in other parts of America among many Indians, of an inclination to be instructed in the Christian religion. However small the propagation of the gospel among the heathen here in America has been hitherto, yet I think we may well look upon the discovery of so great a part of the world, and bringing the gospel into it, as one thing by which divine providence is preparing the way for the future glorious times of the church. When Satan's kingdom shall be overthrown, throughout the whole habitable globe, on every side, and on all its continents. When those times come, then doubtless the gospel shall have glorious success, and all the inhabitants of this new discovered world shall become subjects of the kingdom of Christ, as well as all the other ends of the earth. In all probability, providence has so ordered it, that the mariner's compass, which is an invention of later times, whereby men are enabled to sail over the widest ocean, when before they durst not venture far from land, should prove a preparation for what God intends to bring to pass in the glorious times of the church, namely, the sending forth the gospel wherever any of the children of men dwell, how far soever off, and however separated by wide oceans from those parts of the world which are already Christianized. 2. There has of late years been a very considerable propagation of the gospel among the heathen in the dominions of Muscovy. I have already observed the reformation which has lately been among those who are called Christians there, but I now speak of the heathen. Great part of the vast dominions of the Emperor of Muscovy are gross heathens. The greater part of Great Tartary, a heathen country, has in later times been brought under the Muscovite government. And there have been of late great numbers who have renounced their heathenism and have embraced the Christian religion. 3. There has been lately a very considerable propagation of the Christian religion among the heathen in the East Indies. Particularly, many in Malabar have been brought over to the Christian Protestant religion, chiefly by the labors of certain missionaries sent thither to instruct them by the King of Denmark, who have brought over many heathens to the Christian faith, and have set up schools among them, and a printing press to print Bibles and other books for their instruction, in their own language, with great success. 3. The last kind of success which I shall notice, is the revivals of the power and practice of religion. And here I shall take notice of but two instances. 1. There has been not long since a remarkable revival of the power and practice of religion in Germany, through the endeavors of an eminent divine there, August Hermann Frank, professor of divinity at Halle in Saxony. Being a person of eminent charity, the great work that God wrought by him began with his setting on foot a charitable design. It began only with his placing an alms box at his study door, into which some poor mites were thrown, whereby books were bought for the instruction of the poor. And God was pleased so wonderfully to smile on his design, and so to pour out a spirit of charity on that occasion, that he was enabled in a little time to erect public schools for the instruction of poor children, and an orphan house for their supply and instruction. At last, near 500 children were maintained and instructed in learning and piety by the charity of others. And the number continued to increase more and more for many years. This was accompanied with a wonderful reformation and revival of religion, and a spirit of piety, in the city and university of Halle. And thus it continued, which also had great influence in many other places in Germany. Their example seemed remarkably to stir up multitudes to their imitation. 2. Another thing, which it would be ungrateful in us not to notice, is that remarkable pouring out of the Spirit of God which has been of late in this part of New England, of which we, in this town, have had such a share. But it is needless for me particularly to describe it, seeing you have so lately been eyewitnesses of it, and I hope multitudes are sensible of the benefit. Thus I have mentioned the more remarkable instances of the success which the gospel has lately had in the world, for I proceed now to the last thing proposed to be considered, relating to the success of Christ's redemption during the space, namely, what is the present state of things now in the world, with regard to the Church of Christ, and the success of his purchase. And this I would do, by showing how things are now compared with the first times of the Reformation. And, 1. I would show wherein the state of things is altered for the worse. And, 2. How it is altered for the better. 1. I would show wherein the state of things is altered from what it was in the beginning of the Reformation, for the worse. And it is so especially in these three respects. 1. The Reformed Church is much diminished. The Reformation, in former times, was supposed to take place through one half of Christendom, excepting the Greek Church. Or that there were as many Protestants as Papists. But now it is not so. The Protestant Church is much diminished. Heretofore there have been multitudes of Protestants in France. Many famous Protestant churches were planted all over the country, who used to meet together in synods, and maintain a very regular discipline. The Protestant Church of France was a great part of the glory of the Reformation. But now it is far otherwise. This church is all broken and scattered, and there are now but very few Protestant assemblies in all that kingdom. The Protestant interest is also greatly diminished in Germany. There were formerly several sovereign Protestant princes, whose successors are now Papists. As, particularly the Elector Palatine, and the Elector of Saxony. The Kingdom of Bohemia was formerly a Protestant kingdom, but is now in the hands of the Papists. Hungary was formerly a Protestant country. But the Protestants there have been greatly reduced, and in a great measure subdued, by persecutions. And the Protestant interest has no way of late remarkably gained ground of the Church of Rome. 2. Another thing wherein the state of things is altered for the worse compared with the former times of the Reformation, is the prevailing of licentiousness in principles and opinions. There is not now that spirit of orthodoxy which then prevailed. There is very little appearance of zeal for the mysterious and spiritual doctrines of Christianity. And they never were so held in contempt, as they are in the present age. And especially in England, the principal kingdom of the Reformation. In this kingdom, those principles on which the power of godliness depends, are in a great measure exploded, and Arianism, Socinianism, Arminianism, and Deism, prevail, and carry almost all before them. History gives no account of any age wherein there was so great an infidel apostasy of those who had been brought up under the light of the gospel. Never was there such a disavowal of all revealed religion. Never any age wherein there was so much scoffing at and ridiculing the gospel of Christ by those who have been brought up under the gospel light. 3. Another thing wherein things are altered for the worse, is, that there is much less of the prevalency of the power of godliness, than there was at the beginning of the Reformation. A glorious outpouring of the Spirit of God accompanied the first Reformation, not only to convert multitudes in so short a time from popery to the true religion, but to turn many to God and true godliness. But now there is an exceeding great decay of idle piety. Yea, it seems to be despised, called enthusiasm, and fanaticism. Those who are truly religious, are commonly looked upon to be beside their right mind. And vice and profaneness dreadfully prevail, like a flood which threatens to bear down all before it. But I proceed now to show. 2. In what respects things are altered for the better from what they were in the first Reformation. 1. The power and influence of the Pope is much diminished. Although, since the former times of the Reformation, he has gained ground in extent of dominion, yet he has lost in degree of influence. The vial which in the beginning of the Reformation was poured out on the throne of the beast, to the great diminishing of his power and authority in the world, has continued running ever since. The Pope, soon after the Reformation, became less regarded by the princes of Europe than he had been before. And so he has been since less and less. Many of the popish princes themselves seem now to regard him very little more than they think will serve their own designs, of which there have been several remarkable proofs and instances of late. 2. There is far less persecution now than there was in the first times of the Reformation. Some parts of the Protestant Church are at this day under persecution, and so probably will be till the day of the Church's suffering and travail is at an end, which will not be till the fall of Antichrist. But it is now in no measure as it was heretofore. There does not seem to be the same spirit of persecution prevailing. It has become more out of fashion even among the popish princes. The wickedness of the enemies of Christ, and the opposition against his cause, seem to run in another channel. The humor now is to despise and laugh at all religion. And there seems to be a spirit of indifferency about it. However, so far the state of things is better than it has been, that there is so much less of persecution. 3. There is a great increase of learning. In the dark times of popery, before the Reformation, learning was so far decayed that the world seemed to be overrun with barbarous ignorance. Their very priests were many of them grossly ignorant. Learning began to revive with the Reformation, owing very much to the art of printing which was invented a little before this period. Since then, learning has increased more and more, and at this day is undoubtedly raised to a vastly greater height than ever it was before, and though no good use is made of it by the greater part of learned men, yet the increase of learning in itself is a thing to be rejoiced in, because it is a good, and, if duly applied, an excellent handmaid to divinity. It is a talent which, if God gives men a heart, affords them great advantage to do great things for the advancement of the kingdom of Christ, and the good of the souls of men. That learning and knowledge should greatly increase before the glorious times, seems to be foretold, Daniel 12:4. But thou, O Daniel, shut up the words, and seal the book, even to the time of the end many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall be increased. And however little now learning is applied to the advancement of religion, yet we may hope that the days are approaching wherein God will make great use of it for the advancement of the kingdom of Christ. God in his providence now seems to be acting over again the same part which he did a little before Christ came. When Christ came into the world, learning greatly prevailed. And yet wickedness never prevailed more than then. God was pleased to suffer human learning to come to such a height before he sent forth the gospel into the world, that the world might see the insufficiency of all their own wisdom for the obtaining the knowledge of God, without the gospel of Christ, and the teaching of his Spirit. When, in the wisdom of God, the world by wisdom knew not God, it pleased God, by the foolishness of preaching, to save them that believe. And when the gospel came to prevail first without the help of man's wisdom, then God was pleased to make use of learning as a handmaid. So now, learning is at a great height in the world, far beyond what it was in the age when Christ appeared. And now the world, by their learning and wisdom, do not know God. And they seem to wander in darkness, are miserably deluded, stumble and fall in matters of religion, as in midnight darkness. Trusting to their learning, they grope in the daytime as in the night. Learned men are exceedingly divided in their opinions concerning the matters of religion, running into all manner of corrupt opinions, pernicious and foolish errors. They scorn to submit their reason to divine revelation, to believe anything that is above their comprehension. And so being wise in their own eyes, they become fools, and even vain in their imaginations. They turn the truth of God into a lie, and their foolish hearts are darkened. See Romans 1:21, etc. But yet, when God has sufficiently shown men the insufficiency of human wisdom and learning for the purposes of religion, and when the appointed time comes for that glorious outpouring of the Spirit of God, when he will himself by his own immediate influence enlighten men's minds, then may we hope that God will make use of the great increase of learning as a handmaid of religion, as a means of the glorious advancement of the kingdom of his Son. Then shall human learning be subservient to the understanding of the Scriptures, and to a clear explanation and a glorious defense of the doctrines of Christianity. And there is no doubt that God in his providence has of late given the world the art of printing, and such a great increase of learning, to prepare for what he designs to accomplish for his church in the approaching days of its prosperity. And thus the wealth of the wicked is laid up for the just, Proverbs 13:22.